Hi, Jonathan. Welcome back.
Adam, good to be back.
So I did some research and you were wrong. So Brock is not a god. It is unfortunately only a dwarf.
I'll take it. Mythological and the dwarf god, whatever.
Forged a weapon for, I forgot the other, for the real god. And for Thor, right?
Didn't he forge Thor's hammer?
Thor's, exactly. Thor's hammer. Yeah. It was like the family of very special dwarves who had specific skills. And
you know, that's kind of better than being a god. But yeah.
Yeah, it is more interesting. That's true. And yeah, what I did is I took a look at Brock. So I just installed Brock and give it a shot. And I said, okay, what I can build? And I said, okay, what I could do is just Hello World application which greets the user. So the onboarding experience was nice, I have to say. So it looks nice, the website, and I got the API key. I registered and said, okay, create an application which just picks the username and prints Hello World. And then asked me, empty folder, right? And then I said, okay, but how to build that? And what I told you yesterday, I created a minimalistic build tool called ZB. It just does Java, C, and Jar, nothing specific, but it's fast. And this is what I use for automation scripts because I'm too lazy for POM XML and Gradle. And I say, okay, who cares? I just give Brock the ZBO.shell. This is the shell script which wraps the ZB, which is basically a jar. And it worked, surprisingly. So this really surprised me.
I'm kind of surprised too.
Yeah. And it used my ZB to create a jar. The jar was created. It used the Gemini 2.5. And as the last time, I gave the rule or the markdown, said, okay, pick the latest Java 21. And it was too late. What it tried to use is string templates, which were never released. So I said, okay, this is a little bit too far. So, and then, you know, refine that with vars. And then the code was okay. So I would reuse different classes, but this is, you know, not fault of Brock rather than Gemini. It generates a little bit outdated Java code, I would say, Gemini. I didn't try it with Claude. And what I saw, there is a yearly subscription. So, yes. I could, yeah, this is great. And what I really enjoyed is the speed, because I use Visual Studio Code right now, and this Visual Studio Code is slow. So I forgot actually how fast Java UI was, and Brock is really snappy, and it looks nice. I have to say it really looks nice.
Thanks. And that's something that you don't necessarily get from the screenshots is that. You know, we have put some effort into making the user experience feel snappy. And that's one of the reasons why I didn't want to build another Electron app is because it's just a little bit sluggish. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason to be sluggish on modern hardware.
And this is what I forgot, actually, how fast and well Swing actually feels, because I use NetBeans for years. And I switched to Visual Studio Code because of JavaScript and scripting and stuff like that. And Brock, I just remembered how nice it is. What I did, I didn't use the architect. I just used the code button. And it generated the code. So I didn't even open it with Visual Studio Code rather than with CAT. So I took a look at the Java. This was my round trip, so a very fast one. But I have to say, for me, it was more intuitive than Cursor. And My impression is like Brock is the inverted cursor, because in Cursor you have the code in the front, and the chat is smaller with tiny button ask code or whatever, and it is really hard to get the first time what is it. And in Brock you have the architect and code in front, so it just invites you to push it, so it is easier. As I would say, the onboarding experience for me as programmer was easier than Cursor, actually, because Cursor, I asked myself, okay, I expected some magic, but it was no magic. It was just a chat. And in Brock, it's like, okay, this is an AI tool, right? So this is architect and code, and AI do something for me. So I would say it's more straightforward to me than the competition. So this is the first impression.
Thank you. And this is one of the advantages of building a new tool instead of building a plugin for something else, is that I don't have to, I don't have to try to recreate all of VS Code or all of IntelliJ, as I can build Brock to be the best tool for supervising AI. And, if you're writing code by hand, then yeah, sure, use IntelliJ. Like, that's what I do when I need to write code by hand.
What was a little bit, so what I still don't get, what is the session? Because I don't think whether I used the session or not, because I just used the instruction and it was in the middle and session was on the right. So this is what I didn't got immediately, but it worked anyway. So is the session?
The sessions are a way to organize your work. So it will keep the history of all your actions within the session, and you can undo back to that or branch off of that. But the intention is that if you have a basically every branch that you turn into a pull request, you would probably do in a new session. So I think of the session as my unit of work in Brock. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then, and you can name the session, I think, right? Because yes. For me, it was just new session, and I said, okay. So I suspected something like that, but I said, okay, when it works, it works. And, so at the beginning, I was asked for the build tool, test tool, and the third one I forgot, actually. And the test tool. So what do you expect in the test tool? It doesn't have to be a unit test, right? It can be any script which breaks.
Right. Yeah. So that's part of the reason why it's broken out, is that the normal configuration would be, and I'm going to use SBT examples, because those are the only ones that I'm not sure that I'm going to get correct, because that's what Brock uses. But you're going to have SBT compile to build, you're going to have SBT test to test, and then the third one was to run an individual test. Mm-hmm. And so that would be SBT test only, and then the test name. And so those are broken out because it gives you the option of, do I want to, by default, I'll only run the tests that are in the workspace, which is appropriate for larger projects. For a smaller project, you'll want to switch it over to just run all the tests every time. Mm-hmm. And then, as you pointed out, it doesn't have to be the actual build tool itself. It can be any arbitrary script. So one of the things that I used that for is when I was building a parser using TreeSitter, I had TreeSitter parse my capture file. There's a command line TreeSitter as well as the library. So I had the command line TreeSitter parse my capture file, because that gave more useful error messages. Mm-hmm. And so I had the TreeSitter command, and then I had ampersand SBT test, so that mm-hmm. To chain those together.
Mm-hmm. Brock used the ZB tool, but this is just a wraparound shell, and the shell invokes just Java C basically. So I mean, this is jar, but I'm calling Java C programmatically and jar, and it worked. So I mean, how to give an the feedback to Brock? That it, does the parse the system out, or what?
Well, it looks for an error code that's non-zero, and if it finds an error code that's non-zero, then it captures standard out and standard error, and it mm-hmm. gives those to the AI for feedback.
That's cool, because I could actually because the ZB is crazy fast, like 600 milliseconds for most of my projects, and what I could do is just use another ZBT or whatever for testing, and I did the same. So I got a nice, very fast loop. It could just compile and then test whatever test means. I mean, it could be just calling whatever, right?
That's one of the things that I'm working on for a future Brock release, actually, is that the typical build tools take several seconds to run. Maven, Gradle, even just plain Java C will take several seconds if you don't have a daemon in the background like Gradle spins up. And so I'm looking at adding an in-memory Java parser so that I can get that initial feedback in milliseconds instead of multiple seconds.
If you have
that,
an in-memory,
that's not built yet. I'm working on that.
If you're using in-memory Java parser, you can immediately maybe even pass the ASTs to Brock.
Yes. Yes.
This would be crazy, because it could just look, not at the outcome of the parser. It could just look at the AST, maybe. I don't know whether it would work, but it could be an interesting idea.
Well, I want both. Yes, you're right. Down the road, making the AI understand ASTs rather than text is definitely the direction that we want to go. I think it's months or years away before we get to that.
Mm-hmm. So what you told me offline is that JVector is too slow, so you cannot use it in Brock. Is it true?
No, I didn't say that it's too slow. In fact, it's quite fast.
Yeah.
The problem is that most of the embedding models are they're designed for all kinds of things. There's like 14 different use cases for turning text into an embedding and then comparing those embeddings. For instance, you might want to compare similarity between two paragraphs of text. Mm-hmm. And so the way you would compute the embedding for that is different for what you call retrieval, which is I have a query, mm-hmm. but it's my queries look different from the paragraphs that I'm indexing. So you have this problem where you have to compare the same domain or you have to compare different domains, and building a single model to do all of those is difficult. But everyone tries to do that because people do have those different use cases and want to use the embeddings for each of those. So what that has to do with indexing code is that's an example of the kind of problem where your data domain and your query domain are different. Mm-hmm. So I might write in Cassandra, my query might be, how does Cassandra ensure that the SS tables don't get compacted away before the query's finished processing open SS tables? And then the actual code that has to do with that obviously looks completely different. And so off-the-shelf embedding models just don't do very well at surfacing the relevant code for queries like that. And even the best code embedding models that are purpose-built for that, they only do okay. They don't do great. And
why is the case? Because in Java and in code is not enough context, or
it's two reasons. First is that the embedding is inherently a lossy process, and so you're going to lose some just from mm-hmm. that. But the second reason is that you're typically embedding methods. You have two problems, right? Because an embedding model can index a small amount fairly accurately, or mm-hmm. it can index a large amount less accurately.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in a bad situation when you're trying to use that for finding the right context for your coding model, because if you index just individual methods, for instance, then you might miss an important part mm-hmm. Of context that's in another part of the class. Mm-hmm. But if you try to index entire classes, now you've lost so much accuracy that you get worse results because your unit of embedding is too large. So it's I understand that why other tools use it, because it's better than nothing, but it's just not very good on an absolute rating. So what Brock does instead is it uses agentic search. So it takes the index that it has of your code and it tells the LLM, here's the tools you have available. You have find symbol by wildcard. You have fetch method by method name. And you have find usages of a symbol. And so use these tools to find the code that's relevant to the problem we're trying to solve. And this is the downside of this is that it's slower, because at every step where it's deciding what tools to use, it's taking a couple seconds to do that round trip with the LLM. But the upside is it's very, very, very accurate. It does an extremely good job of finding the code you're looking for, because it's basically doing what you would do as an expert engineer, is, you know, going through the code base, trying to find the relevant code, and then reading it. Because it's not just like doing this once, right? It's invoking the tool, looking at what comes back, and then saying, is this actually answering my problem? If it's not, then I'm going to keep looking.
I got an idea right now, because what I still do in Java projects, or still, I mean, until now, is I use Java packages as logical units. Logical means like business units. So for me, it is they are directly linked to business domain problems, and then every package is structured the same way. So what could work maybe, that we have embedding for entire package, then embedding for class, and embeddings for methods. So you could search, so you will find the package first, and then in this embedding you have linked to other finer grained embeddings, like, you know, tree of embeddings. This could work as well, right?
It could. And I remember reading about some papers that people wrote about doing hierarchical embeddings like that. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the details. It is a valid approach. But this is what's one of the interesting things that I learned in when I was working on JVector, is that this whole problem domain of information retrieval is as applied to machine learning techniques like embeddings models, is really, really young. Google's Word to Vec paper was published, I think, in, I want to say, 2016. It's like 10 years old. Like this entire field is 10 years old. So there's all kinds of cool ideas you can try. Some of them are going to work, some of them aren't going to work. But yeah, this is a place where, you know, interesting ideas are just like all over the place for people to pick up and try out.
Because what I was thinking is, this is like AI-driven development, right? So if we structure the code that is understandable for us, it is also understandable for AI. Because if a class captures, you know, a logical concept which makes sense, we can query for it, because we are human, so we are also searching for logical things. And then the embeddings will work. But if we have one huge class, which is pointless, so there are basically no embeddings. They're not meaningful. It's like, you know, Java util package, everything is there. So if we create a Java util package embedding, we'll find from date to collections, everything there, right?
Yes. Yes. And
what I do right now is actually, so back to package info to Java. So, you know, and what I do, I was against Javadoc. And I spent time in enterprise projects, and, you know, what they did is, this is a getter, this is a setter, this is constructor. So, okay, we don't do this. And if you have time to do such a thing, so before you do this, we have logical packages. This is the components, business components, and every package has to have package info.java with essential responsibility. And with AI, it makes even more sense, because it can be easier index, right? If you say this package is responsible for this and this and this, as not obvious stuff, it can be easier for AI to index the thing. And this worked well. So what I do, I start with Java packages, package info, and I add to the package info, for instance, references to my specs or whatever I have. And and so far, works well.
Yeah, and you make a good point about, in general, things that are easy for humans to understand are also easy for the AI to understand. That can occasionally get you in trouble, where the AI does not think like a human. But in general, that is a good rule of thumb, is what I found as well.
Yeah, I'm in trouble every day, but at the beginning, because if there's not enough context, AI tries to do the most obvious thing, which is obvious for trivial applications, but not in the context. But if you write a little bit more code, it goes into the right direction. So I mean, at the beginning, there are too many possibilities, but if you set the direction more clearly, it works in this direction. So this is my experience so far. It's also very new, right? So, okay.
Yes, and I actually want to write a short article about how LLMs are like artists, and you've probably seen the example of, you know, if you just take a blank canvas and you say, okay, make art. Like, it's really difficult to come up with, like, which direction should I go in? But mm-hmm. if you say, okay, I'm going to challenge myself today to make art about a blade of grass. Like, okay, mm-hmm. now I can use that constraint to guide my creative process. And guiding an LLM is kind of the same way, where you need to give it the appropriate constraints, or you get garbage.
Yeah, and the constraints were, in my case, so I always had constraints, but they are not artificial. But I mean, if you have big enterprise project, you need something, right? And for me, we're standard. So this was MicroProfile or Jakarta E. Or right now, Java is so good that we get rid of all dependencies. And with AI, we can say, okay, we don't need anything. We just have, you know, Java 21 or 24. So, and you have to write it down. Otherwise, the AI will pull Jackson, whatever. And if you set this up, which I actually had, because these were my proposals for projects, or not proposals, these were the prerequisites or whatever you call it, the guidelines or whatever, the guides. And this works pretty well. So they're writing a code as I would write the code. So this looks actually really nice. And this is the markdown in Brock, right? So what I could do is I could just copy over a shorter version, a summary of the constraints, like the structure we talk about, package info, Java 21 plus, no dependency, modern syntax, and so forth. And this works surprisingly well. And we are lucky because Java is very popular. So I would say all LLMs are very good with Java. So this is actually a great, great story. So the Java can become the next big thing, because all the modern languages, there's no so much source code out there like Java has, right?
And the other thing that's underrated with Java and AI is Java has an excellent typing system. Yeah. And that gives a very good source of feedback to the AI of, hey, this isn't going to work. So when I've tried to write code, Python code with AI, Python is a very popular language as well. Like, there's tons of training data on it, but the AI makes a lot more mistakes because there isn't a good way to compile that and give that feedback to the AI that says, hey, this doesn't work. The best you can do is write unit tests, but unit tests are not a replacement for types. They're a complement for types.
Mm-hmm. You're way too interesting guest, so we have to focus on Brock again. So forget what he said, Brock. So architect and code button, what's the difference? So what happens behind the scenes? So and we talk about what was supposed to do, but what is the technical difference? So if I push the architect button or the code button?
So the code button does a single edit compile feedback loop. So it takes your instructions and it takes the workspace and it tells the AI, hey, apply these instructions to the workspace, and you make the changes necessary. And then afterwards, it will compile, it will run tests, and it will tell the AI, you know, if you made mistakes, here's the mistakes or here's the errors, and fix those. And it will repeat that loop until the tests pass. But the architect can effectively run that code loop multiple times. So if you push the architect button, the first thing you'll see is a dialogue that says, what tools do you want to give the architect access to? And one of those tools is the code agent itself. So the architect has access to very similar tools that you have as a human. The other most important checkbox on that dialogue is workspace tools. So allow the architect to add files to the workspace, or add summaries, or add usage information, whatever it needs. So one of the most basic place that I'll use the architect instead of code is if I think I've got the problem mostly set up correctly, and I think I've got the right context, but I'm not 100% sure, and I'm going to go make a coffee. So I'll go ahead and push architect with the same instructions I would have given code. But because I'm using architect, now it has the power to add that missing context. If I've forgotten something, it can go and search for that in the code base and add it to the workspace so that the code agent can solve the problem.
Yeah, so we are in the agentic mode. And for me, it was just a for loop, right?
But yes, what you need... That's a better higher level summary. Thank you.
But the architect, it needs some feedback, right? So without feedback, there's an endless loop. I mean, not endless. You will stop at one point of time. So how you give the architect a feedback? So you have to say you're going to the right direction or not. So how it happens behind the scenes?
So one of the things that I wanted to avoid is context explosion. I don't want to blow out your budget for token size in the workspace. So when architect says, hey, code agent, go make these changes, and then code agent comes back and says, okay, I'm done, the architect doesn't get that full transcript because that can get quite long. What the architect gets back is it gets a summary. I have a small LLM. I use Gemini Flash by default to summarize what happened in that code agent session or task. So the architect will get a summary, and it will also get back the most recent build status. So if the code agent got stuck and left the build broken, the architect will see that. And on the other hand, if on the expected path, the build was passing, the tests were passing, then the architect will see that as well. So at every step, the architect gets to see what is the current status of the workspace and what changes got made in response to the last tool that I invoked.
Mm-hmm. So it means for architect, I will have to create a prompt a bit differently, because in the code, I just say do this. But in architect, I have to craft the prompt with a goal, right, in mind.
Yes. So behind the scenes, Brock is prompting the architect to tell it, hey, you have access to these tools. You aren't going to make changes to the code directly yourself. You're going to create instructions for code agent to go make changes. So to a first approximation, you can pretty much just give your normal instructions and let the architect figure out how to decompose that into subtasks to tackle. That said, one of the things we've talked about is, AI makes mistakes. So if you want to reduce the chance of it making mistakes and breaking it down poorly, or not breaking it down at all and trying to do it all at once, which is usually not what you want, then you can give it more structure. And like the first level would be to just explicitly remind it, hey, I need you to break this down into steps that keep the build green while you work on them. And then the most explicit would be to actually tell it, like, here's the steps that I want you to execute.
Or not only steps, maybe a step further, right? Like, say, I would like to have a fast solution, even if it looks ugly, let's say. Or, the structure, I would like to have a nicely structured project without any dependencies. And for that, we could even have a repository of architecture or prompt flavors, right? Speed, performance, then resilience, whatever. And you could pick, a category of prompts which are prepared for Brock. And you can only fill, whatever you like to have. And then here we go. Because otherwise we get the artist problem, If a developer just gets what to put there, right? And on that note, you said already tools. I guess you're also working on MCP integration, right?
Yes. So we don't have MCP integration today, but that is on the list, yes.
Because I'm working on, I'm already done with no dependency MCP Pure Java server, yeah. And one thing is, when working right now, actually, is templates, prompt templates. Mm. So there's actually list prompts and get prompt. So with list prompts, you get all the prompts. This would be perfect for architect. You can say, hey, architect, which prompts do you have? And I say, okay, this is build, let's oversimplify it, a fast system, a maintainable system, or just whatever, do whatever you like. And then the you get the list of prompts and the parameters which are expected. So the architect could, for instance, pass the parameter to the prompt, and you get ready to use prompt back, and the prompts could be created by team or maintained by team, which would be a nice enterprise feature, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, super cool. So this is really interesting. I mean, and by the way, I forgot also to tell you the also what I really liked is the installation experience from Brock. I said it was nice, but with JBank it was nice because there was one liner, JBank was already installed in my case, and it just worked. So it took, I don't know, 2 minutes. I have slow internet, and then Brock opened without any problems. And so this was also surprised me that, yeah, pure Java experience, right? So this is what I like. And you know, because, you know, people saying Java is bloated or whatever, and in your case, it's the opposite. It is very fast experience, faster than Visual Studio Code, way easier to install than Visual Studio Code, because with one liner, you get everything. There are no plugins, nothing. And yeah, this is...
Shout out to JBank, absolutely, for making Java programs easy to run and install. Like, you don't have to worry about what SDK to use. JBank takes care of all of that for you.
Mm-hmm. But maybe in the future, a single jar would be also cool, right? So I can just have Java minus jar and Brock jar and done.
Yeah, I mean, you can do that. The jars are available for download on our GitHub releases page. The problem is that you do need to specify some flags to Java. So you need to add in,
Mm-hmm.
You know, the vector module is experimental. So there's a flag for that. So it's easier to put that in the JBank catalog than to try to explain how to use it with java-jar.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now what happens inside? So we got a little bit, Sean, overview what happens. So you are using multiple LLMs at the same time. So there's one smaller, which for summaries. And then you can, what I already saw, pick and choose. So I just use the free edition because I could use Gemini. But if I upgrade, I will get the Claude 3.7 and 4, I think. Is it so? What you already mentioned, there is a agentic search which finds the code, and So what happens if I push the run button? We said, okay, this is one instruction, it happens. Mm-hmm. But if I start with a blank project, it will generate one file. The file has to be indexed, I guess. And it doesn't happen over and over again, so the index has to be stored somewhere, right?
Yes. So when you open a project in Brock, it will create a .brock directory, and mm-hmm. it will save the yearn code graph in that directory, as well as your session history and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And this yearn graph is used by LLM? Or directly or indirectly, or how it is working?
It's used indirectly through the tools that Brock exposes. So this is where I mentioned that the architect has access to substring a symbol wildcard search, or find usages of a symbol, or fetch the source code for a method definition. Those are all going through the yearn index.
Okay. So whatever we do, the yearn index is the... single source of truth for the LLM, right?
For symbol manipulation, yes. For what are the contents of a file, the file system's the source of truth.
But if we are searching, it searches the index first or goes to the files?
If we're searching, then we'll go through the index. But the distinction is, if I'm editing the file, so if I've got a file in my workspace and I'm telling it, make changes to this file, then that's not going through the index. That's just coming from the file system.
Mm-hmm. And okay, code and architect, we said this is the loop. But if I have references to external APIs, it would be more natural to think to add it to the architect, right? Not to the code. Let's say Java directory, no?
It really depends on the scope of the problem. So for me, the difference is I'll use code when I have a single well-defined task, and the architect if I have multiple tasks that are related. So I would absolutely pull in dependency information for use by a code task if that were appropriate for what I was building.
So now my simplified view of Brock is it is able to analyze existing code base, or if you create new code, it just creates an index in Yearn. The build system of Brock can be whatever you like. It has to get feedback. It is the exit codes and a system out an error, and this is passed to LLM, and LLM decides what to do. And with this information plus Git information, so what I also saw, it insisted to create a Git repository. No, insisted. It's like, it is better to have a Git repository. So and you access the Git history directly or indirectly? Directly, I guess, right? JGit I saw already.
Yes, directly.
Mm-hmm. So this JGit, Yearn, and the current file maybe is the context, and the context is passed to the LLM. And LLM gets the information, creates some code, and what it creates is hidden in prompts, I guess, right? So there are some prompts, or you have a template engine which creates the prompts on the fly, and you instruct the models not to create too much stuff, maybe a view files, because if it creates, right? So you have to say, don't create too much, just one file at a time, otherwise it will explode.
Yeah, there's a whole prompt sequence for instructing the LLM. For instance, one of the things that you'll get if you put code into ChatGPT and ask it to make changes is it will often say, okay, I made some changes to this part of your class. And then there's a comment that says rest of the class remains the same. Well, mm-hmm. That's not what we want to get back from an LLM working on my code base. So there's a prompt that tells it, here's how you give me diffs that I know how to apply to the code so that you don't have to give me the whole file at once. But it's machine parsable so that I don't have to go in as a human and say, oh, it says rest of the code is the same, so I'll paste it in there. So yes.
So you use structured output as well, right, for ChatGPT, so you can say.
Yeah, so that's an interesting point, because you can use structured output, you can use tool calling, but those are both designed around JSON. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that LLMs, when they're trying to output code as part of a JSON parameter, like there's a ton of escaping that has to go on to make that fit, because code is full of symbols that can't be used in a JSON literal unless you escape them.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you do that, if you do that for, I don't know, a few hundred characters, then it's fine. But if you try to do it for a few hundred lines of code, it will make lots of errors. It's really, really bad at consistently giving correctly escaped JSON when dealing with code. So we actually have a custom format for the diffs that don't require JSON escaping, and we don't use tool calling. We just instruct the LLM, here's the kind of diff format that I want you to output. We do use tool calling in the architect, because there's just, you know, there's a couple dozen different tools. Well, there's a dozen different tools that it can use. And so trying to design a format for that to work without tool calling is just it's a nightmare. But for long formats of escaped text, tool calling is not good.
Okay.
So that's what we do instead.
So I think we covered the internal. So did we miss anything? So I mean, a lot probably, but a high overview is enough, right? So
that's a good overview. Thank you.
Perfect. So your time is limited. So how much time do you have still?
I've got 5 minutes if we want to go.
Okay.
For 5 minutes.
Then do next time. So I have to reinvite you back in a couple of weeks, maybe, if there's a new version. So it
I'd
is really
to.
Yeah. And Brock AI is the website.
That's right, Brock.ai.
Brock.ai. And everyone has to subscribe for yearly. So there is a 10% off, as I right? So
that's right.
Yeah. Which is great. And what I don't like in the subscription is that you say at the beginning there's no markup. What I think it would be better to have some markup, you know? Because from the beginning, so you expect, you know, what happens later, and then you can say after the beta, it is going to be this amount. You know what I mean? So you can say there is a small markup, and then it will be bigger markup. But no markup at the beginning is a little bit strange for me. So, right?
Thank you. I like it when people tell me that I should charge more money.
Yeah, you should, because what I don't like, the people, if the companies don't charge anything and you don't know what to expect, you know? So it would be better if you invest to a tool to say, you know, there is a small markup right now, which is fine. You have to earn money. And later it is going to be this, 10%, 20%, whatever, or a range. It would be more than this, right? So this is what I say, okay, fine.
That's worth thinking about. But I'll also add that in our next release, we're going to have support for organizations who want to manage subscriptions for a team of engineers. And for those, we're going to charge more money. So
fine.
I'm not looking to make a lot of money from individual developers, but I do want corporate subscriptions to fund Brock development for sure.
Yeah, but you know, if you have a little bit markup, and you could even, you know, donate the money to the open source people who maintain the project or whatever. You know, it could be a loop, whatever. So, but because you know this is a commercial product, and we have to pay anything anyway. So I mean, but just you know, this was my thinking. So I saw this like no markup, so why not? I mean, a small markup, 5-10% wouldn't hurt, and at least we see, you know, what happens.
Point taken.
Yes,
thank you.
Yeah. Thank you a lot. And where people can find you on Blue Sky, Twitter, or whatever?
I'm on Twitter as Spiced, SPYCED.
Thank you a lot, and see you next time.
Thanks again. Bye.